our final case on the calendar this morning is case number A24-1966, Daniel Hatlovig versus Jason Schott et al. And if I've mispronounced those party names, please correct me when you take the podium.
Cool. How are you doing?
Bill French, are you?
More than you, sir.
Oh, okay.
Nice to meet you.
Good morning, counsel, or good afternoon now. I see we're afternoon. Just a few housekeeping matters. You'll each be given 15 minutes for argument this morning, and appellant has an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. Before you begin your arguments, please feel free to step to the podium and make yourself comfortable, and then make sure to identify yourself and your client for the record. For if you weren't here earlier, my name is Elizabeth Bentley. I'm sitting today with our Chief Judge Jennifer Frisch to my right and Judge Susan Siegel on my left. So with that, appellant's counsel, you may take the podium.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is William French, and I represent the appellant Daniel Hatlovig in this case. I wanted to start out with a passage from Romeo and Juliet because I think it pertains to this case. And it is, what's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other word would smell as sweet. In essence, the phrase suggests that regardless of the name used, the thing itself remains unchanged in its fundamental qualities. And that's what we have here. We have a mobile home that was manufactured in 1973 before the federal law changed in 1974 that made all sorts of new requirements for the manufacture of these mobile homes. That, and then they became, another phrase was used to describe them, a manufactured home. This was a mobile home, it never changed. The fact that there are several statutes or rules that make mobile home and manufactured home synonymous is totally irrelevant in this case. What's relevant is—
Why don't we apply the definition that was operative at the time the deed was signed? Why does it matter that it was built and may have had a certain name in 1973 when the deed used terms that would be operative today?
Well, because a mobile home is, still remains a mobile home. It doesn't magically convert into a manufactured home.
Well, if the exact same, let's say, even though it's probably outdated with different bells and whistles that homes manufactured or homes would have today, let's say that the exact home here was built, like, you know, just before the deed was signed, in its exact condition and placed exactly the way that it is and was at the time of sale. Would it have been a manufactured home then?
No.
Why?
Well, because the initial term used to describe what resulted from a manufacturing process was a mobile home. It didn't become a manufactured home by magic. It was sold as a manufactured home because a manufactured home could be sold for more money. And also, this brings us to the question of discovery. If discovery had been allowed, we'd be able to get into these issues and also find out the background to the sale. What did the sellers know? Did they know it was a mobile home? Did they simply disregard that? Did they commit intentional misrepresentation or negligent misrepresentation? And
so on what do you base that there's a difference between, because it's just saying that it's a manufactured home and you're saying that's false because it was a mobile home.
Correct.
But what was the court supposed to look at? Because there has to, first and foremost, there has to be a misrepresentation, right?
Right.
And so what are you relying on?
Well, the misrepresentation.
What did you present to the court, I guess?
Well, the misrepresentation was that it was a manufactured home when it was a mobile home. their difference in value. And that brings me to the point of, if this case is affirmed, does it stand for the principle that you can avert discovery by serving a Rule 12 motion with an affidavit? Is that automatically converted into a...
Did you ask the court for more time or notice, you know, or it seemed to me from the... your response of pleadings that you were accepting that it was a summary judgment motion and responded instead of saying, wait a minute, this is completely inappropriate. This is Rule 12. There shouldn't be an affidavit there.
Judge, I agree with you completely. But what does a litigant do when he or she finds himself or herself in this situation where, and in this case, this Rule 12 motion had been pending for 6 to 9 months or something? I had tried to get discovery going. I was rebuffed. I sent the other attorney a proposed discovery plan, rebuffed. What do you do when a Rule 12 motion is served with an affidavit? Do you just simply continue to address it as a Rule 12 motion? Or do you submit an affidavit to try to counter that? You're put in this impossible position.
I don't necessarily think you're put in an impossible position, counsel. I mean, Rule 5606 provides for a mechanism for you to set forth what discovery you will conduct and what facts you intend to elicit, which would justify a continuance or additional discovery. And also, it doesn't prevent you from getting your own expert to justify your own position, right? I mean, there are options.
There are options, but how, I mean, is this how you avoid discovery? Is by serving a Rule 12 motion with an affidavit? I mean, we were not allowed to do discovery. This case cannot be adequately litigated without discovery and probably an expert witness.
So tell me, discovery to do what?
Well, discovery to have the vehicle examined. As to its undercarriage, as to whether it's attached to the foundation, all those sorts of things.
Didn't your client own it, though?
Yes.
Yeah, so if they own it, they can do that investigation.
Well, we couldn't do it. My owner sold it prior to this litigation starting. He had to make a business decision about, he was going to move to Wisconsin, so he sold it. So... But still, that leaves the question, if you're served with a Rule 12 motion, do you do all those things and then submit that to the court, just assuming it's going to be converted into a Rule 56 motion? I don't think so. This was a Rule 12 motion. It was inappropriate to allow it to be inserted into a summary judgment motion. You can't avoid discovery by using that technique, I don't think.
Did you make that argument to the district court?
Yes, I did. And it's in my brief.
That it was improperly converted to a summary judgment motion.
Yes, I did make that argument. And it's unfair to the litigant. I mean, how do you, you're kind of like caught in the gap in the zone defense. Do you regard it as a Rule 12 motion? Do you regard it as a Rule 56 motion? Do you do it as a Rule 56 motion, not having had any discovery where we could have taking the depositions of the sellers?
What are the material disputed facts that discovery would have shed light on? It seems that there was no dispute here, that there wasn't a proper foundation, but that it was affixed to the land or to the property, right? Even if it didn't have a foundation. And that seems to be the main dispute here, right? As to whether that's significant in calling it a manufactured home.
Well, that's part of it. But again, we go back to, it was manufactured as a mobile home. There are certain attributes of that that expert testimony would have explained that made it different from homes constructed after 1974. I mean, we have to assume that the federal statute caused a change in the manufacturing process. We needed probably an expert witness to come in and examine it after we got into the discovery process. So I think that discovery was absolutely essential in this case. Discovery has sort of become the be-all and end-all of litigation in some respects.
So was it a hidden defect? Then, I mean, that there's something about that there was not an adequate foundation. Was that hidden from your client?
Well, when he bought it, yes. He didn't examine the whole thing. He didn't have an expert look at it before he purchased it. And as time went by, he realized there was a flood and the undercarriage was damaged by water. And then
what was the misrepresentation contained in? Was that in the contract?
It was in the contract. Intentional misrepresentation or negligent misrepresentation. Those are recognized torts. The motion for Rule 12 dismissal should have been denied. And at a minimum, the court should have taken the position that, okay, you submitted an affidavit here. I think the plaintiff is allowed an opportunity to conduct discovery just like you would in any other case. And we weren't permitted to do that. I brought that to the attention of the court, and the court went ahead and granted summary judgment. And like I said, in discovery, we find out more to develop the torts that we had alleged. What did the sellers know? How would it have been sold to them? The expert testimony would have been necessary to really develop the case. So we were denied that opportunity. And by this improper conversion, I mean, this comes up. Rule 12 motions are kind of difficult to handle because do you address them just as a Rule 12 motion or do you address them as a summary judgment motion?
Well, it seems like the issue is whether or not the use of the term manufactured home was a false representation.
That's exactly.
I think, you know, the discovery you're talking about, I'm struggling to understand how it's helpful or relevant to determining whether this was in fact a manufactured home, as that term was used in the contract, which we typically presume and read contracts like we read statutes, and what's the legal meaning of manufactured home. So I still don't quite understand how it would be different maybe if there were other allegations in the complaint of fraud or that they said other things, not just manufactured home, but they said it had a foundation. Like, and there I could see where discovery would be relevant. But if we're just talking about the term and nothing else, how does that discovery, how could that even help the court decide what appears to be a legal question about what the word manufactured home in the contract means?
Well, it's different from mobile home. Mobile home constructed in 1973 is different from a manufactured home.
Where's the legal basis for that position?
Well, the legal, because the terms are different. Mobile home.
But we have lots of case law. There are statute, our own case law. There's Minnesota statutes, the Minnesota administrative rules that say that mobile home and manufactured home are synonymous terms. So what legal basis do you have that they're not synonymous terms?
Well, in those rules, they are synonymous, but like I said before, that's totally irrelevant to this case. What's relevant?
Well, the administrative rules go back, there's a provision, in rule, it's 1350.0100, the definitions, subpart 40, talks about mobile homes, and it also defines them as synonymous. Manufactured home and mobile homes are synonymous terms, saying the manufactured building code means for manufactured homes manufactured after July 1st, 1972. So that seems to at least go back that far. So what's the position that a 1973 legal support for the idea that a 1973 home had a different meaning?
Well, I cited a statute in my brief. It's on page 8 of my brief, which describes a mobile home. And that was, this statute was applied in 1973. It's 327.31 sub 6 in the statute at that time. That mobile home was defined vastly differently from a manufactured home as described later. So You know, I think this case in sort of the final analysis is a very simple case that for two reasons should be reversed. One, looking at this as a motion, Rule 12 motion, the court side are recognized that should have been denied. It should not have been allowed, they should not have been allowed to convert it into a summary judgment motion. And we should have, the plaintiff should have been allowed discovery. So appellant urges this court to reverse the trial court, send it back to the trial court for a trial on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, you're welcome to approach the podium and you'll have 15 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Morgan Minster and I represent the respondents, Jason and Carrie Schott. You know, appellant is right. This case is very simple. Fraud and negligent misrepresentation require that a false statement be made. And at no point in this case has appellant been able to point to a false statement that respondents made. To start first, I'll just note that nowhere in his briefs at the hearing did respondent object to the conversion of the Rule 12 motion into a Rule 56 motion. In fact, on page 7 of his brief, he discusses the standard for a summary judgment motion. And on page 4 of the transcript, when summary judgment is discussed, he did not make the argument that it should not be converted to a Rule 56 motion.
And on our review now, is it your position that we should be looking at it through the lens of a challenge to a motion granting summary judgment and not under a Rule 12 Walsh notice pleading standard?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe the district court correctly converted it to a Rule 56 motion because both parties submitted information outside of the pleadings.
And it's my understanding from reviewing the record that there was no Rule 5606 showing made by the plaintiff in this case about what discovery was expected to reveal and why discovery had not been conducted to date. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Not to correct you, but I believe it's Rule 5604.
Oh, the predecessor. I'm old. See, that's why I said 5606. So yes, the predecessor, 5604. Thank you.
Yeah, so jumping to the discovery issue, first of all, appellant did not properly preserve this issue. Under Minnesota General Rule Practice 115.04, a non-dispositive motion requires at least 21 days prior to the hearing, a notice of motion, a proposed order, affidavits and exhibits, and a memorandum of law, if appellant intends to submit one. All appellant submitted was two affidavits and one memorandum. He never asked the court for formal discovery. He only mentioned at the hearing that he believed it was probably necessary in this case. Even then, as you said, Frisch, appellant cannot show he's entitled to further discovery. So under 56.04, if a non-movement shows by affidavit that for specified reasons, it cannot present facts essential to justify its opposition, the court may allow time to obtain affidavits or to take discovery. So appellant did submit two affidavits in this case. Appellant submitted one himself and then appellant's attorney submitted one. Appellant's affidavit is just basically the facts of the case. Appellant's attorney's affidavit is general grievances against our law firm and against Winona County Court Administration. Nowhere in the affidavits is there any fact or information given for appellant's reason why he couldn't oppose the summary judgment motion with the facts that he had at that time. So for that reason, we would argue that appellant is not entitled to further discovery and he did not properly preserve it.
So did the district court, though, improperly reject Hadelvig's affidavit saying this is not a manufactured home? A manufactured home is something else. Did that require the court to say, wait a minute, he's not an expert on this? Because that's in his declaration.
Yes, Your Honor. So we have no issue with Daniel Hadlovic's affidavit. I don't think it has a lot of evidentiary value in this case here because he is not an expert on what manufactured in the mobile.
But did the district court consider that? I mean, the district court ignored what was in his affidavit in essence. And did the district court have the authority to do this when this is a Rule 12, kind of right out of the box, no discovery, nothing else, not typical. It happens, but not typical. So was the district court within its discretion in saying, wait a minute, I'm going to discount the declaration in this affidavit?
I believe so, Your Honor, because Mr. Haplovic offered expert opinions. He did offer facts of the case, but those could be also found in the complaint. He didn't really allege anything outside of the complaint there. So I don't think the district court was incorrect in not accepting his affidavit. Going to the main issue on the case here.
Can I ask you just this kind of jumping into that about, I'm assuming that turning to kind of the, is a manufactured home and a mobile home the same thing? When interpreting a deed like this, should we be looking at whether it was a mobile home at the time it was manufactured as opposed to what it was at the time of the deed? Or is that a different, is there any difference there?
I don't believe there is a difference, Your Honor. Under every single Minnesota statute rule I could find, mobile home is synonymous with manufactured home, basically everywhere. And the court also cited multiple opinions showing that mobile home, manufactured home, they're pretty much the same thing. They refer to the same sort of thing.
Can I, just to be more maybe precise in my question, let's just say for argument's sake that it was a mobile home in 1973. So if we take that as true, which I don't, not saying that I do, but just take that in 1973, this was categorized as a mobile home because there were different meanings at that time. Today, they have the same meaning. Does it matter for purposes of this case? Does that matter for purposes of this? Do we look at the deed and what it was at the time of the deed, which is that it had the same legal definition, even if it had technically been categorized as a mobile home at the time it was constructed?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. You know, from what I've been able to gather, this national act that was done in 1974 just switched the terms over to make them more accurate and to more, I guess, accurately describe what a mobile home was, which was that it was a manufactured home, you know, a home made in a factory. So, you know, I don't think, as respondent argues, you know, a 1973 WIC home is different than a 2018 home, which we're not arguing that it was built in 2018. You know, we are saying it's a 1973 home, but whatever you want to call it, a mobile home, a manufactured home, under Minnesota statutes, it is the same thing. Mobile home is not a term anymore in the Minnesota statutes. Almost everything in the statutes and the case law refers to a manufactured home. In Minnesota Rule 1350, you know, respondent keeps arguing that an anchored foundation is necessary for a manufactured home. This is just simply not true. All that's required is that it's built on a permanent chassis, which this is, that is designed to be used as a dwelling, which this is, and that it may or may not have a permanent foundation. So there goes respondent's argument from his complaint, basically.
So what's the point then that... it sounds like the grievance is that it would have been worth less if it had been characterized as a mobile home in the deed. So, and I get that this is a little outside of the scope of the statute, the interpretation question I'm asking, but if they're really the same for all purposes under the law, why would it have a different value if it were labeled a... And is there something about a misrepresentation there in the context of a sale of the property that by calling it manufactured, it actually was inflating the value of the home?
I'm not sure if that allegation made in appellant's complaint is actually true, that if respondents had sold it as a mobile home, it would have sold for much less. I do agree that if it's affixed to the property, then it probably will sell for more. And this property was affixed, as shown by the May 8th, 2018 affixment, affidavit of affixment filed with the Winona County Register. But, you know, I'm not sure, and I really don't think that representing it as a manufactured home increased the value, because all homes like this generally are treated as manufactured homes, despite the year they were built. You know, Appellant's arguments just have this similar theme that they have little to no basis in fact or law. At the September 5th hearing, appellant's attorney argued that mobile homes can be hauled around and manufactured homes are attached to the real estate. He cannot provide support for that at the hearing and still today cannot provide support for that statement. In his brief on page 9, appellant argues that mobile and manufactured homes are used interchangeably for convenience or taxation purposes, nothing more. Again, there's nothing to support the statement. I've been trying to find support for it and I cannot find anything. And then finally, in his brief on page 9, he notes that a mobile home constructed in 1973 is simply not a manufactured home circa 2018. And we're certainly not arguing that. We're saying this was a home that was built in 1973. At the time, under federal regulations and Minnesota statutes, that was considered a mobile home. In 1974, HUD was given the power to change the regulations around manufactured slash mobile homes. And they changed the definitions, and Minnesota followed suit. Jason and Carrie Schott sold this home as a manufactured home because it is a manufactured home under Minnesota law. And Your Honors, if there's no further questions for these reasons, I would ask that you affirm the decision of the district court.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. French, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
There are just a couple points. One, in Daniel Altevig's affidavit, he talks about how the price was inflated because it was represented as a manufactured home at paragraph one. On page 8 of his affidavit. And also, as Judge Siegel points out, he says in his affidavit it wasn't a manufactured home. That creates a genuine issue of material fact that can only be resolved by a jury. And in that respect, the court made an error. I think that if a person, a litigant, a party, serves a Rule 12 motion with an affidavit, it should be ignored. The affidavit should be ignored. You can't convert the moving party can't convert a Rule 12 motion into a Rule 56 motion without titling it a summary judgment motion.
I mean, the rules seem to indicate otherwise, and did you make that objection before the district court?
I believe I did, Your Honor.
Okay. And how do we deal with the rules indicating otherwise?
Pardon me?
The rules of civil procedure allowing for this.
Well,
for this procedure, how do we address that?
Judge, that's a good question. Again, as I pointed out in my initial argument, when confronted by this situation, what is a litigant supposed to do? I mean, this had been scheduled as a Rule 12 motion for, I don't know, months and months. So that's the way I regarded it. And then when it was an affidavit attached, I've talked to other trial lawyers and they say, that's totally inappropriate. It should have been regarded as a Rule 12 motion. Only a respondent to a Rule 12 motion can convert it into a Rule 56 motion. So that's my position, and I think that
the district court did. It's not that the court like it kind of ignored or didn't decide or hear your objection or request for discovery. Right, the court's order expressly references the provision that Chief Judge Frisch had mentioned earlier, the 5604, and considered whether discovery would be appropriate, but found that it wasn't essential to justify your opposition to the now converted summary judgment motion. So in some sense, is it not kind of fighting over semantics about whether or not this is a Rule 12 motion? Like, the court considered whether discovery would be relevant and determined that it was a question of law as to whether or not manufactured home and mobile home were the same, and that here there was no basis, even a discovery, to find that anything would change that. So I'm just wondering what error the court made that was prejudicial to your case.
Well, I guess one genuine issue of material fact created by the Hanvig affidavit.
But even if an affidavit, I mean, the court considered it a question of law. So even if someone in their affidavit says, as a, you know, it was it was a mobile home, not a manufactured home, that only is relevant if it's a question of fact.
Correct.
So if it's a question of law, then how did the court err in not heeding or finding there was some material dispute of fact on that?
Well, I think it's an error of law as well. The court took the position that the two terms were similar. But as I said before, I think it's totally irrelevant to whether we're dealing with a mobile home built in 1973 that is different from whatever is manufactured after 1974 when the law changed. So I think that, again, I guess going forward, that you can serve a Rule 12 motion and you just have to, you can avoid discovery. I'm not doing discovery. And then serve a Rule 12 motion with an affidavit. It automatically converts it into a Rule 56 motion and forces, in this case, for a party to defend without having had the chance to do any discovery. This seems very unfair to me. Unless the court has any further questions.
Awesome.
And other questions? I'm the final person today, so thank you for coming out to the court. I was active for people to come down here. Not that I know, like St. Paul.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you for your argument. And with that, the case will be submitted and we will issue an opinion within the time required by statute. That concludes our oral calendar this morning. Again, we want to thank the staff with the district court who've welcomed us and appreciate the opportunity to come and hear arguments here. And with that, our calendar has concluded and yes, that's it. We're recessed. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.